Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of Inside the BDO, the podcast, with me, Andrew Sinclair. It's good to be back. It's been a busy month or so that's seen one season end and another one get underway. We've had a World Cup. We've seen the field for the 2020 BDO World Professional Championship set. We've seen the Grand Slam, the darts picks announced, and we've had some drama with the World Masters. It's been a very, very busy period, and on this episode, I'm going to recap everything that's kind of happened over the last month or so. There's going to be a chat about the World Masters, not a full preview, and I'll explain why later. And there's also interviews with Mike Warburton and a special one for me, one with Martin Wolfie Adams. So the first competitions to take place after the last episode came out was the British Open and British Classic over in Bridlington. Always very big competitions at the end of the season with a lot on the line. And this year, in the ladies' competitions, Lisa Ashton did the double to pick up her fifth and sixth titles of the year, while Wesley Harms and Denny Alder-Kalter won the men's competitions during a frantic weekend. Harms made it six titles for the year in the British Open final when he beat Mike Warburton 6-5, with Alder-Kalter triumphing in the British Classic the day before. In the Open, Harms had beaten the likes of Max Pritchard, Andy Bolton, Matt Paget and Scott Waites. And in the semis, he averaged just shy of 100 to beat Rhys Colley 5-4. Meanwhile, Warburton, who shot to prominence by winning the Welsh Open in 2018, he beat the likes of Simon Tate, Nick Falwell, England international Nigel Hayden and Jim Williams in the semis. Warburton played fantastically well in the semis, won 5-3 with an average of 94.4. In the final, Warburton came out like a train and took a 103 in the first leg for a 15 darter, with Harms responding in kind by taking out 116 in the second leg. The two went neck and neck, and every leg went with throw up until the final and deciding 11th leg, when Warburton's scoring, which had been so impressive earlier in the game, seemed to desert him, which allowed Harms to fire in a 16 darter to secure a 6-5 win. Another impressive performance from Harms, who has now got a 50-point lead at the top of the BDO rankings, but still remains to be seen whether he can convert his amazing form and his lofty position into a first big major title. Denny Alder-Kalter went out early on in the Open, but he didn't have such a fate in the Classic, as the 29th seed stormed to his first BDO ranking title. That run booked Alder-Kalter his place at the World Championships, because beating the likes of Ant Hall, Andrew Whelans, Eddie Mordecai, Tony O'Shea, Sam Ridgway and Jason Heaver. He then beat Harms in the semis. And in the final, he saw off Dave Parletti to pick up the title, winning 6-4 in the end. That secured the Dutchman a first World Championships place. And you know what? He's been one of those who's come up in the second half of the season, did well in Switzerland, has done well in the Western European events. But he's clearly a very talented player, capable of some good scores and good finishing, and he's recorded some good wins on the tour this year, so yet another Dutchman worth watching. In the ladies, as I say, Lisa Ashton did the double. She was fantastic. In the British Classic, she dropped just one leg before the semis, where she fired in a 94.1 average to beat Anastasia Dobromyslova 5-3. And in the final, she beat Fallon Sherrick, and she edged that one. It was a lot tighter, that one, but she edged it 5-4. And then she defended her British Open title on the Sunday, picking up the title with a win over Beau Greaves in the final. The following weekend, we went over to Bruges for the final events of the season. Obviously, there was a lot on the line. Turned out not to be as dramatic as maybe I'd hoped or expected, because a lot of the players in contention crashed out early, and some of those who were provisionally in spots, they got good enough runs on either the Saturday or the Sunday to affirm their places at the World Championships. Beau Greaves successfully did the double in Belgium, and her first trip outside of the UK this season, which was obviously great for the young lass. The men's events, the titles went to Nick Kenny and Brian Roman. For Kenny, it was a third title in just 8 weeks. He won the Bruges Open, which was the Cat A, and he won that by beating a game Jason Heaver 3-2 in the final. Kenny went into an early 2-0 lead in that final, only for the Berkshire ace Heaver to pull it back to 2-2. But Kenny held his nerve, took out 56 in the final leg of the match to win 3-2, averaging just over 93 and hitting six maximums en route to the title. It was a great run for Heaver, who was enjoying his best ever run in the BDO competition, and he'd beaten the likes of Scott Mitchell and Andrew Beaton earlier in the day. So his run was no fluke, as he went on to prove in Northern Ireland the following weekend. Aaron Turner, his run to the last 16 secured him provisionally. It's not being confirmed yet because the Asian qualifier slot is still up in the air, but we can pretty much rest assured that Aaron Turner is in that de facto World Masters spot now, where he, unless somebody not already qualified wins the World Masters, Aaron Turner will be making his World Pro debut next year. But John Scott and Francis Carragher missed out, didn't quite do well enough in Belgium in the end, but those two obviously still have a chance at the World Pro playoff later this month. Brian Roman secured his spot at the Worlds with a great run in the in the Belfry Open, which was the Cat B. And he won that in the end by beating Thibaut Tricol in the final 3-2. Obviously, great run for Tricol, mixing it with some great players. But Roman was really impressive. I mean, he dropped just one leg before the last 16, and then he beat Silco Visser, he beat Olde Kalter, and then semis beat Gert De Vos. It was a really, really good competition. Another great run for Ben Hazel, who's hitting a real purple patch of late. While Chris Landman made a semi-final, which has been a rarity for the Rapid Dutchman this season. As I say, Greaves did the double in the ladies' competitions, which is just crazy. I mean, that took her to eight titles for the year, and it ensures that she'll be the sixth seed for the World Pro, which is crazy. Also, I mean, the results over the weekend ensured that Trina Gulliver is now 14th, or was 14th at the cutoff, so she's in that World Masters spot. Obviously, the chances of someone not already qualified for the Ladies World Championship winning the World Masters are probably slimmer than in the men's, because to some extent, the ladies' game is more predictable. We always know that, realistically, it's going to be Lisa, Dieter, Anastasia, Laura Turner, Mikuru Suzuki, Aileen de Graaf, that Fallon Sherrick, that wins those kind of titles. But you never know. There are some talented ladies players out there who aren't in that top 16. You know, if the draw works out in their favour, you never know what could happen. Also that weekend and the weekend before, we had the final US, Australian and Kiwi events of the season. And they basically saw what was the players that were at the top of the table going into those final events. They all secured the place at the World Championships. Joe Chaney didn't win the final event of the season, the Wich City Open, but he did enough. He did better than Leonard Gates, which was all he needed to do. So he's back at the World Championships, getting another crack after his great run at the World Trophy. Justin Thompson secured his return after once again being the best player on the Australian circuit this season. And Darren Heroini, who went on to impress many people with his win at the World Cup singles earlier this month, he booked his debut by doing enough at the final event of the season, with Mark McGrath losing in the final of that final Kiwi event to Mark Cleaver. The old season had barely finished and suddenly we were underway with a new one. Went over to Northern Ireland for a doubleheader at the Bellinis in Newry. There, Keane Barry, the Irish teenager, he won his first BDO ranking title, as Carl McKinstry and Kirsty Hutchinson also won ranking events. McKinstry carried on his title winning form from the PDC Challenge Tour to pick up the Northern Ireland Open title for the second time by beating Jason Heaver 6-5 in the final. As I said, another great run for Heaver, but McKinstry was really impressive. He beat Kieran Tian, who's been super impressive of late after bursting onto the scene. But McKinstry was great. I mean, it was a really tight final. Heaver pushed him all the way, but McKinstry took out 56 to win his first BDO ranking title in 16 months. It's the sort of form that puts the village man in good stead for probably what will be another crack at Q School in January. The weekend's proceedings were then wrapped up by Keane Barry, with the 17-year-old producing some phenomenal darts to win the Northern Ireland Match Play, which was a new competition for this new season. Barry had beaten the likes of Alan Edwards and David Evans en route to the final, and he regularly averaged over 90. And in the semis, he beat Mark Warburton 6-2, and then he followed that up in the final, winning the game against Paul Hogan by the same margin. He finished the match with a brilliant 1-2-4, and he showed the sort of darts that he followed up the following weekend at the Tom Kirby Memorial Trophy when he booked his debut at the PDC World Championships. Great performances from Barry. He's clearly such a talent. It's lovely to see him win. It was a very interesting, unusual moment in this game with David Evans, where game was going into a last leg decider. Evans throws first two darts, treble 20, treble 20, throws the third one, goes in the same bed, but the grouping was so tight, the third dart knocked the first two out and he ended up with a score of zero. I mean, if he'd nailed that, he would have been a perfect start to a leg, and you never know, Stretch might have won, and maybe it would have been him who went on to pick up the title, but yeah, can't undermine how well Barry played. And I mean, it was some fantastic events in Northern Ireland in general. The stream was really good. Quality of updates was a little bit patchy, but the stream was fantastic and some great darts. And it was highlighted by the fact there were 2 9 darts hit over the weekend. Warren Penny achieved it in the last 256 of the Open in his 4-3 defeat against Alan Kerr, while Liam Gallagher, who obviously lost to Barry in that Tom Kirby final, he hit it in his match play last 128 game against Kev Thoburn, and much like Penny had done, he actually lost the game, which, I mean, it's so often the case with nine darters that you hit them, the euphoria, you then end up losing. But obviously, still an incredible achievement, and congrats to those two players. As for the ladies, Kirsty Hutchinson did the double to take her tally of titles to 3. In the Open, both the semis went down to a deciding leg, with Kaisu Räikkönen of Finland seeing off Laura Turner 4-3, and Kirsty Hutchinson beating Denise Cassidy by the same margin. But in the final, Hutchinson was absolutely ruthless, whitewashing Räikkönen 5-0. She wasn't quite as dominant on the Sunday, but she still came out on top, winning the final 5-2 against Cassidy. Great form from Hutchinson, who was unlucky to miss out on Worlds qualification through the table. But, you know, she's got to be red-hot favourite to secure a place in the World Pro Qualifier just over a week's time. But someone who was fantastic in the British Open and in Northern Ireland was Mike Warburton. And I managed to catch up with the Welshman just over a week ago. It was a really fun interview, so check it out. I am now very happy to be joined by recent British Open finalist Mike Warburton. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No problem at all. I mean, you're really impressed at Bridlington. You beat the likes of Simon Tate, Nick Fulwell, Nigel Hayden, and then Jim Williams before you lost in the final. But how pleased were you with that result?
Yeah, well, made up. I hadn't played for a while before that tournament, and it was only because my wife just said, oh, why don't you go and have a game in Bridlington? I hadn't picked my darts up for weeks, so I was shocked with the way I played. But sometimes it works in your favour when you don't, you know, you just have a little bit of time away and then you come back feeling fresh, and it just worked out for me on the day. I was a bit gutted that I lost in the final, because I put myself in the right position to win it 5-4 up first to 6. But I can't complain. I played some really good darts, especially against Jim in the semi. You know, I was really, really pleased with what I'd done.
What was it that had made you kind of take a while away from the game then?
I've had some private, you know, personal issues. My mum's suffering with cancer, and I've got a lot of things on my plate. So I just had darts just took a back seat for a bit, you know.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, mate.
No, it's fine. It's fine. She's not too bad at the moment. That's why I come back. And I think after having time to think about things, I want her to see me succeed while she's still around, you know. So I think she wants that as well. So you know, I'm doing it for my wife and kids, and my mum, you know. And I'm looking forward to this season. I'm currently just looking for a bit of sponsorship, and I'm hoping to do the whole circuit this year. And if I carry on the way I'm playing, and I'm confident, I've got no doubt that I'll get enough points to qualify for the Worlds next year.
I mean, that's all the motivation I think anybody could possibly want. I mean, that performance in Bridlington was fantastic. And then, obviously, you hadn't played a while before then, and then you kind of carried on in Northern Ireland, and you reached the semis of the match play where you were beaten by eventual winner Keane Barry.
Yeah, I played well. Do you know what? The semi-final was probably the worst game I've played all day, so I let myself down a little bit. But to be fair to Keane, he played phenomenal. And the first 3 or 4 legs, he put me under severe pressure. Like, his scoring was great, and he was just banging his double first start. He was hitting his double before he even got back behind the hockey. It was that quick. I was 3-0 down in a blink of an eye, so I've got to hold my hands up to the lad. And yeah, all the best to him for the future. He's going to be a good player. I hope I meet him again so I can get me revenge for it.
Well, I mean, yeah, he was fantastic on the Sunday, but it was another good run for you, and obviously puts you in a good position form-wise. I want to kind of go back to last year where your name, a lot of people kind of heard your name for the first time when you won the Welsh Open. Did you feel that win kind of put any kind of pressure on you when you went to tournaments after that?
Do you know what? It did a bit, yeah. I've always known So in my own mind, I can beat anyone on the game because, you know, I bet a lot of people, a lot of players, when they're on a practice board, you know, you have days where you just don't miss. And I thought, you know, I've always known I can do it. But I think that Welsh Open, I was just absolutely on peak form and just come from nowhere, really. And, when you do win a Category A-plus tournament like that, out of the blue, then I think a lot of people are looking at you and also yourself, you're expecting to win. And it was like you put a lot of pressure on yourself. So it was a relief to get, you know, to the final stages on Bridlington, just to prove to myself again that you know, it wasn't just a fluke at the Welsh, you know. So, yeah, and I know I can do it. When I'm on form, I know I can do it. But I think at the moment, the consistency is getting well up there. You know, I'm playing well. I'm not playing any bad games, really. I'm playing well, and players are having to play really well to beat me. So, like I say, I'm feeling really confident at the moment. So I'm looking forward to Cyprus next week.
Certainly, I know when I was watching you at Bridlington, the scoring I thought from you was fantastic. And it just sort of, in that last leg of the British Open final, the scoring sort of left you a bit. But before then, really, really consistent.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, but I've just felt, for some reason, I don't know what it is, but something has just clicked in the last couple of months. You know, last month really. Something I just felt like my game's just gone up that little level of the consistency's come, and I've just learned to relax a bit more and just let me enjoy my darts and let my game flow, and it seems to just be working out for me. But it's nice when you're in a confident mood, because you know, every dart player knows that when you're confident, you play well, but it's peaks and troughs. You've got to learn to take the rough with the smooth, and you know, there will come times where you go have a little bit of a bad run and you don't get past the first couple of rounds, but you just got to sort of keep soldiering through it and try and get your confidence back. But yeah, at the minute I'm flying high, but with the Masters coming up and so a lot of tournaments in the next few weeks, my form seems to be peaking at just the right time, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Well, certainly. I mean, it is obviously a new season getting underway. It gets very busy quite quickly. And obviously, you're playing a lot, obviously, locally for county and obviously in tournaments. But you say you're hungry and positive. What does a practice routine look like for you?
I'm going to be brutally honest, and I don't really practice that much. Honestly, I've got four young kids at home, and my dartboard is in my living room. So the wife isn't very impressed when I'm hammering the board when she's watching EastEnders. and the kids are always around me. To be fair, both my boys are well keen on darts. I think they're both going to be playing junior county this year. I'll be trying to get involved in that as much as I can as well. And so they always want to play with me. And it's not ideal. And, you know, one of them's 11, one of them's 7. Caleb and Taylor, I'll give them a little shout out. And they're always keen to play on the ball, but like, it's not ideal for me to be practicing with the kids. But I'll try. Look, I normally try and get practice in when they go to bed. But it's I don't get much opportunity to practice, not as much as I should be. But yeah, I basically I'll just try practicing my finishes, do play 1-2-1 and 6 darts, and then I've got like an app on my phone that I just play the computer level 10 or whatever, see how I get on.
For a limited practice routine, you're doing fantastically. So if you were practicing more, I can only imagine how well you'd be playing. You want to be busy, you want to be involved on the tour. You mentioned the Masters, you mentioned Cyprus. What else is on the immediate horizon for you?
The Cyprus next, I fly out on Tuesday, and then I get home on the Tuesday night, and then it's the Masters the Wednesday morning, and then they've got the World Championship playoffs the week after that, and then there's Prague coming up. I just booked my flights yesterday for Prague. Italy is next month as well. I'm planning on going to all those, so I want to try and rack up the points while I'm on form. You know what I mean? I'm keen at the moment, and like I say, I'm currently on the hunt for some sponsorships. I've got a couple of things in the pipeline, so hopefully, if I can get some financial support, because I won't be able to do the whole, you know, the whole tour without it. So hopefully, I can sort some things out in the next week or two, and then I'll know where I stand a bit more than how much I'm going to play.
And certainly, if you can carry on this form in the early part of the season and rack up some points, that in theory takes the pressure off you and gives you a bit more flexibility in the new year to pick and choose, given your current situation.
Indeed, yeah, definitely. you've got to make the most of it while you're on form, and hopefully I can just keep the form going all season, but that's easier said than done.
Very true. I mean, something I do want to address this week is obviously the World Cup over in Romania, and the likes of Nick Kenny represented Wales. He got to the men's semis yesterday. Is playing for your country something you want to do?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I think I'm knocking on the door, to be honest. And whether I get picked, I don't know. But I've been playing county and playing Super League. And last season, topped the averages of my county A division. And I'm playing well on the tour. I don't think that matters really what you do on the tour, because I think it goes on county averages. But yeah, I'm definitely knocking on the door, and I've got my fingers crossed to be picked for next year. But we'll see. Well, that's not, it's out of my hands.
Certainly would be a great honour, and you joined some phenomenal names to have played for Wales over the years, like Sir Martin Phillips, Wayne Warren, obviously Nick Kenny at the moment, as well as a number of others.
Oh, definitely. Massive respect for all those people you just mentioned. And I've had the pleasure of having a few drinks with Nick and Wayne and a few with Jim and a few others. And yeah, they're good lads, and I'd love to play alongside them for my country. It's a dream of mine.
Well, I mean, you've got a fantastic setup with your county as well, the likes of Tony Martin and David Edwards.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've got a great side. We've done really well last year to get promoted, and we're hoping to do the same again this year. We've got Merseyside away on Sunday, and that'll be a tough game. But I think we've got the quality that even through the B team and the A team, we've got on paper, we've got a really good side. So we're looking forward to another good season, and hopefully we can get up to the next division.
Got a very good chance. I think darts in Wales at the moment, I spoke to Nick Kenny a while ago, and he seemed very, very confident about the state of Welsh darts at the minute, and I would have to agree with him. There's a lot of great talent kind of all across the board, really.
Yeah, 100% agree, yeah. It's looking really well. Nick is on absolute fire at the minute. Really impressed with the way he's playing at the minute. Nice to watch. I watched him the other day for Wales, and he played really well. 100, he's hitting over 100 averages consistently at the minute. Nice to watch.
Oh, he's finding probably the best form of his career there at the minute.
Oh, definitely, yeah, brilliant.
I mean, you talk about your, going back a little bit, you talk about your children and them sort of getting into darts quite young and playing junior county. Did you start playing darts at a young age?
No, I didn't. To say that, not competitively, but my mum was a good dart player, so shout out to Lorraine. She's always had a dartboard up in the house since I was born, basically. So I was throwing darts from when I was young, probably 5 or 6. So I've always thrown darts, but I didn't play a competitive game until I think I was 16. I went to the pub with my mum and dad, and there's some lads playing darts for a dart team in the other room, just having a practice. I said, oh, can I have a game? And then I started beating them all, and then they were like, oh, come and have a game. So I started playing like when I was 16, just for the local pub, and then just went from there. I didn't start playing county till I was in my 20s. I stopped playing for like 8 years, 8, 9 years, just for my local pub, and that's when I come back and won the Welsh, which was a massive shock. It was the first, I think the Welsh Open was the first tournament I entered for 8 years, which it was just a mental weekend, once in a lifetime weekend, that was, to be fair, and put me on the map sort of thing, and made people take notice,
Well, it certainly did. I mean, you beat some fantastic names that weekend, the likes of Dave Paletti, Scott Waits, Andy Hamilton, obviously, in that final. And
yeah.
I think the way you're playing at the moment, it won't be far before another title's coming your way.
I hope so, mate. Yeah. I'm feeling like that myself. I feel like I'm just on the edge, I'm just going to go to one dart tournament soon, and then it's just going to click, and I do fancy it. So, like I say, that when the confidence high, it's good, so... See how we get on
with it. Well, thank you very much for coming on, mate. I better let you go. You've got a tournament to play in.
Yeah, I have. I'm sitting outside the pub now, waiting to go in. Tony Martin's in there organising it, so he's bought me some time to come on the podcast. Cheers, Tony.
I'm very grateful, mate, and I wish you all the best for the coming months.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Thanks a lot, mate.
No problem.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mike. It was a really interesting one to do. It was one of those that kind of tells you that you can never really know what players are going through off the hockey, but I think Mike's doing really well with it. I mean, it must be hard. I mean, any parent having cancer, I mean, we all know somebody who's had it, or we all know people who've suffered, and obviously it must be tough for him. And I mean, tough too, because she was the person who introduced him to the game in the first place. But I think he's taken it in his stride, and he's in a real purple patch. So I wish him all the best. And he's a genuinely nice bloke as well. So he deserves some success, and his talents certainly merit it. As he mentioned in the interview, he played in the competition, which he won. Delighted to tell me that it was sort of easy money in the end, but continued his great form. He won for his county the following weekend, and he signed a deal with QSL, Belgian darts manufacturer. So it's really looking up for Warburton, and I think his is a name that we're going to be hearing a lot more about in the months to come. Well, following the interview I did with Mike, we had the WWF World Cup, which was a great week of events, as always. This year took place in Romania, and I mean, some just standout performances. Mikuru Suzuki, she did the double by winning the ladies' pairs and the ladies' singles. And I mean, it makes you think. The year she's had is remarkable. As far as I'm concerned, I think she's had the most impressive year of any ladies' player on this year in 2019. Ashton's played tremendously well. Obviously, she's done her exploits on the Challenge Tour. She played fantastically at the World Trophy. But, you know, Suzuki won the World Championships on her debut. She then followed that up with the Dutch Open just over a month later, which is an incredibly hard tournament to win. And then she's picked up the World Cup singles. I don't think anyone's matched that at all. And I mean, she's just had an incredible year, incredibly composed throughout the week. But also, credit to Dieta Hedman in the ladies' singles. She was a late replacement in the competition. She came in last minute because Trina Gulliver dropped out. And Dieta just was phenomenal, you know. Sometimes she's a bit patchy in those bigger tournaments, but she was phenomenal. And final was really tight, 3-3, could have gone either way, but Suzuki then reeled off four legs on the spin to win. But Hedman did herself proud, and she was just fantastic. Over in the men's, as I say, Heroini won the men's. It was a quality final between him and his Oceanian colleague, Peter Machin. Won it 7-6, but it was a very tight game. And I think people got to see from Heroini in that final that, you know, he likes to give it large. He likes to show a bit of emotion. I think some of the Gerwin Price comparisons were maybe a little bit over the top, but he's certainly a character. And I'm looking forward to seeing him in the World Pro and seeing how he gets on, because I think he could cause a fair few upsets. Also impressive in the men's singles was Nick Kenny. I mean, he started the day off with a 107 average and just consistently played tremendous throughout the day, got to the semis. But, I mean, he did some real damage to his foot, and he was playing with what transpired to be a broken foot for a lot of the day and a lot of the week. But now he's got that diagnosed, and he doesn't need too much surgery or anything on it. Hopefully he'll be back in action soon, but that might potentially affect him at the World Masters. But, yeah, Kenny's just playing some incredible darts at the minute, and he showed that at the World Cup. Beau Greaves, as I mentioned, she did another double. I mean, she won the girls' pairs with Shannon Reeves, and she also won the girls' singles. And that helped as England won the youth. I mean, they more or less did a clean sweep of the youth in the end, as Keelan Kaye won the men's boys' singles, rather. And he also won the boys' pairs with Brad Phillips. The adult team competitions, Wales won the men's. They beat a Hong Kong team led by Paul Lim, who are obviously going to be a fan favourite team for a lot of people. And in the ladies, the England women's team won the team event as they won the women's competition overall. The Dutch won the men's overall competition, but the men's pairs were won by Canada. A great final between Jeff Smith and Dave Cameron for Canada and Scott Mitchell and Dan Day for England. Smith and Cameron played some phenomenal stuff, ridiculous averages from the pair of them. And just, you could tell it obviously meant a lot to him, but they played fantastically. And just great to see, as always, the players so proud to represent their countries and take the opportunity. And I could also just say that the addition of Dart Connect for this tournament was phenomenal. I mean, it was amazing to be able to just keep track of games, keep track of players all day, get averages, get stats. I mean, it's phenomenal for people like, you know, guy who runs the Farrier Dart and Index, Dan Hutchinson, who does Darts PPR, but also just myself, who's like fascinated by seeing who's played who, the nation matchups, and also players that I've interviewed in the past, seeing how they get on and stuff. So I thought it was a phenomenal addition, and we'd love to see it more. I think the idea of using it at the Dutch Open might be a step too far, but, you know, I think there's certainly more room for it, more scope for it, you know, and it's just phenomenal software once again being used. News-wise, we've also had the Grand Slam picks announced, which obviously source of controversy and debate, as they always are. I mean, that's largely because the criteria isn't announced in advance, which inevitably leads to debate, discussion, who should be in, who's going to be in. But in the end, I think they made the right choices. The players they picked were obviously Glenn Durrant, the world champion, Jim Williams, the World Trophy Champion, Mikuru Suzuki, the Ladies World Champion, Lisa Ashton, the Ladies World Trophy Champion, Dave Paletti, Richard Veenstra, Wesley Harms, and Wayne Warren. I think they're really good picks. I think all of them have got a chance to impress. I think it's nice to see the ladies back in. I think it's 100% the right call. Rise of the Ladies game gives them more exposure, more opportunities. And I've said before, rising tide lifts all boats. The more opportunities the ladies get to play with the men and get to raise their game, they will only improve and will only improve the image and the scope and the respect for the ladies game. So I think it's a massive step to reintroduce them. 100% the right call. Interesting to see they've not gone with the World Masters champion, but, you know, I think there are some question marks around the tournament at the minute. Obviously, there's some players boycotting and whatever. And, well, I say boycotting, that might be a bit strong, but there's certainly some players not entered for various reasons, which I'll get into in a bit. But I think they've made good picks. I think Wesley Harms, if he can continue the form he's shown on the floor and stuff, I think he could do some real damage, and I'd tip him to maybe get out of his group. Same goes for Wayne Warren as well, if he's overcome his hand issues, because I think of obviously Dazza doesn't really count because he's gone to the PDC and he's just obviously, you know, he's hit the ground running and just smashed it already into the top 32. But I mean, if you're looking at the BDO men that they've picked, Harms is definitely the biggest scorer there. He's probably the most consistent, or Wayne Warren. But I think they're the power scorers, and at the end of the day, that's probably going to be, in that format, in that quickfire format, that's going to be key. Obviously, interestingly, Leighton Bennett wasn't included in the end, and the official reason given was safeguarding concerns. Obviously, he's very young and worried about him getting overexposed and whatever. You know what? I think, to be honest, it makes sense. Obviously, some people wanted to see him there. I wasn't too fussed either way. I've always had my reservations. I mean, the lad's 13. We do need to slow our roll a bit and not rush him too much. He's clearly an incredibly precocious talent. And obviously, I don't mean precocious in a negative light. Just he's phenomenally gifted for his age, and he's taken to the tour, like a BDO tour, like a duck to water. But he needs to be protected, and there's clearly a very, very bright future for this kid, and he needs to be kind of protected and kept on the straight and narrow, and, you know what, not push too hard too fast. I think there's a lot to be learned from the way they've kind of put Bo Greaves forward, or the way, say, James Beaton has approached things by doing the youth tour and then gradually moving into more senior men's events, or Bo Greaves just doing the UK stuff. Obviously, there's the pressure on Leighton for his education. He's obviously at a key age at 13. And I think there's a lot that goes into it. And I've spoken about it on the podcast before with Gary Stafford and Oki Balboa. But, you know, I think it's a tough one. But we're definitely going to see the lad at the tournament in the future. Just obviously not this year, but you never know. Probably next year when he's a bit older and a bit more experienced, and obviously they're a bit more organised and prepared for it all. But I've mentioned it a fair few times. World Masters is very much around the corner, just over a week's time now. But before I get into discussion of that tournament, which is always one of my favourites, I had the opportunity to speak to a certified BDO legend earlier in the week, and he's my darting hero, and he's the reason I'm into the BDO, Martin Wolfie Adams. The chat genuinely meant an awful lot to me, so I hope you enjoy it.
On a personal level, I'm now very delighted to be joined by one of my darting heroes, Martin Wolfie Adams. How are you, Martin?
Yeah, not too bad at all, Sam. Woke up this morning, so it's a good day.
Well, you have to look for the positives.
Doing right.
I mean, where I start, I guess. I mean, you've qualified for the 2020 World Championships. Are you excited to be back on that world stage again?
Well, I wouldn't say necessarily excited, but pleased to be there, yeah. You know, I wouldn't say I'm excited because, I mean, I've done 25 consecutive years. So, missed one last year, back again this year. So, yeah, I'm very happy about it, but I wouldn't say I was excited. Well, not yet anyway.
You mentioned it there, you've transpired now, you missed the final tournament at Lakeside. Are you disappointed about that?
Well, no, not overall from playing point of view. You know, I was involved with Eurosport, so I was still part of it, shall we say, part of the last one at Lakeside, which was, you know, very pleasing in many ways. I think it's sad that it's moving from Lakeside, but, you know, things move on and you can't stop progress. You know, it has to go on. You know, it moved years ago, moved from Jolly's in Stoke to the Lakeside. Now it's moving on from Lakeside to the Indigo.
Yeah, I think certainly things always change and venues come and go. So obviously it's just been there a long time. So I think it'll be a culture change for some people. But for next year, I mean, you qualified after a pretty decent season. You picked up a title in Italy and then got to the Welsh Classic final and a couple of big quarterfinals as well. It was a pretty decent season overall.
Yeah, not too bad. Yeah, I was hoping for better. But, yeah, with the arthritis in my shoulder, sort of, sometimes my arm's got a mile of its own and it just doesn't happen. Yeah, I went out first round in the British Open, went out first round in the British Classic. Second round, there's some other ones, which, you know, you look at your performance and you think, well, that was pretty rubbish, you know. But, you know, grateful I've accumulated the right amount of points to get through. So, you know, it's got to be good.
Does the arthritis affect the way you throw or practice at all?
It certainly affects the amount of time I can practice, that's for sure. You know, I used to be able to do 2, 3, 4 hours on a stretch. I can't do it no more. You know, the shoulders just don't let me do it. So, you know, you have to recognise when that's it, it's enough for the day, leave it, rest it, come back again tomorrow. Yeah, so it does slow you up.
But I know my mum's got arthritis issues, so I know that it can sort of impede you in doing stuff. So I'd sort of expected that it would. So is it a case for you now, when you do practice, is it a case of much more targeted stuff that you do?
Well, I wouldn't say I've changed my routine all that much, really, to be perfectly honest. It's all a question of making sure you can hit where you want to hit, when you want to hit it. You know, but sometimes, like I say, you know, the arm seems to have a mind of its own and it does what it wants and they go where they want. I've got no control over it.
Oh, well, you've still done very well in that case. And something I have noticed, I mean, the field for the Worlds this year, you're one of the few kind of old faces on the BDO Tour, like yourself, Daryl Fitt, Antonio O'Shea, Martin Phillips. You're the only one of them that's qualified. Is it nice when you kind of think that you're the one who's still there putting your name in the lights, as it were?
Well, yeah, of course it is, yeah. I mean, you know, I've been around it a long, long time and, like I say, done 25 consecutive Lakeside appearances, so... Yeah, it's nice to think that you can still compete with the young'uns because the young'uns are getting so much better. They are, you know, quality players. You know, you've only got this young Mr. Clearmaker from Holland. What an impact he's made this year. You know, really brilliant. So the younger element is, you know, still pushing through and making it harder for us olders.
No, I mean, you mentioned Martin Clearmaker. He's been super impressive this year. And it's a really young field for the world. You've got the likes of Gino Voss, Brian Roman, and obviously young Leighton Bennett as well. But which one of those, or maybe somebody else that I've not mentioned, has impressed you the most from what you've seen on the tour?
Well, apart from Martin Clearmaker, I think the man that's impressed him recently has been Nick Kenny from Wales. He really seems to have got a grip of his darts, producing results. Even if he's not winning, he's getting semi-final runner-up. Really, really impressive. I guess if I was going to tip the winner, if it wasn't going to be me, I'd probably go with Jim Williams again, because Jim's a class player. But I think if it wasn't Jim, I'd probably go with Nick Kelly, to be honest.
Well, Nick's been amazing. Obviously, he won sort of 3 titles in a very short space of time, but obviously got injured at the World Cup last week, which is obviously something you know all about, representing your country.
Yeah, it's a tough one. World Cups, early starts, late finishes. You've got to have the stamina to do it, that's for sure. It's hard work. It's the round robin thing is just one leg sudden death, you're up. You play your leg, you're off, next one's up. And that's tough to play. That is very hard to play. Yeah, the only benefit you've got, I suppose, in getting any kind of sort of consistency together, feeling you've got consistency, is in the singles and the pairs. With the team event, you know, it's up, just play one leg and that's it, you're done, win or lose. And then the next man's up. So, it's tough.
Well, it certainly is, but there was some outstanding stuff at the World Cup this year, as there always is. But on a BDO point, you also qualified for the World Trophy this year on the telly in Blackburn, and you played Scott Mitchell in the first round. Was that a nice positive?
No, yeah. It was a positive, yeah. But what a mess I made of that 121 out. Oh, it was atrocious. You know, only in a single 3 and he had a big 19. I mean, that was bad. That was bad. But there you go, that's the way it happens. Sometimes I always think, some things are not meant to be, and that one just wasn't meant to be.
It's the first time in a long time, though, you've had to play in one of those qualifying events. How did you find the setup there?
The setup was really good. Really, really good. I started off well. First leg, I had a 1.56 out, which certainly boosts the confidence in the way you're playing. And I managed to get through that qualifier. And but I mean, environment-wise, it was very, very good. Very good indeed.
And what did you, it was the first BDO event that they've done at the King George's Hall, what did you make of it as a venue moving forward?
It reminded me actually of Hull City Hall. It's an old building, and everywhere you went, there's stairs. Basically, you know, stone or concrete stairs. Everywhere you go, there's these staircases to climb. You know, it's just one of those old style buildings, and you've really got great character. It was a good venue. But, you know, it just reminded me of Hull City Hall, which is a very sort of similar sort of setup, you know, stairs everywhere.
It came across well on TV, and obviously they've got it for the next couple of years, so if they can promote it well and stuff, they should get a good crowd in there and really make the most of it.
Well, I sincerely hope so, yeah. I mean, you know, once you run it in a venue once, then, and it was a good, positive, quality event, more people will come and watch the following year. And it's the one thing with the World Trophy, it never seems to have stayed in a venue more than 1 year. Mm. And I think that's been to the tournament's detriment. But now we've got it there 3 years, that should boost our crowd. And hopefully we might then get another 3 years at King George's Hall. You never know.
Well, I certainly hope so, because as you say, I mean, the World Trophy sort of bounced around from Wales to Preston and to all sorts of places. And I mean, it's hard to build the tournament when it's changing month in the year and location and everything's been announced quite last minute.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that does make things very, very tough to get a good audience. You know, people tend to book these things quite far in advance. And you're right, that's it, I'm set. I'm having those few days or that weekend or whatever it is, you know, to go and watch the darts. You know, but if the dates start changing around, people are not going to book up the tickets early. That's the one thing that we've experienced. You know, it's a sad thing, but, you know, that's part of life. Unfortunately, it is part of life.
Well, the next TV event is only just over a week's time now. The World Masters, a competition you've won 3 times before, but this year it's been played at the Circus Tavern. It's a classic old venue.
Yeah, the finals, yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, I've done a couple of exhibition nights down there. It's certainly a different venue from the point of view of what's going on backstage. But, we, you know, we start off at Gray Civic Hall, so that looks quite a nice venue from what I've seen on the internet. It's got a modern place. It's right next door to a leisure centre. So, you know, it all seems to be attached together, the leisure centre and the Civic Hall. So I think that'll be good to start with. And then, yeah, as you say, we move on to the Circus Tavern.
And obviously this year all the seeded players are starting from the floor, which could make things very, very open. How do you fancy your chances in the World Masters?
For any tournament, I always fancy my chances. Yeah, you've got to. If you don't go into it positive, thinking that you can win, then you'll never win nothing, you know. But, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, you know, form's not been that good on the big events. But, you know, you have to take it as it comes. I'm very positive about it. Yeah, I don't see why I can't get through to the finals and play at the Circus Tavern.
And what do you make of the seed starting from the floor? I know it's how things used to be done. Do you prefer that, or do you think that the players who've worked for it over the course of the year should kind of be reserved for the TV stages?
I knew this question would come up. I really did. I just think it's putting it back to how it used to be. And as I said to one or two of the directors of the BDO, I was party to the meeting when it was changed to the last 16 being on stage. And that was done for the benefit of the BBC. It was something they wanted, something they desired, to give continuity between the World Masters and the World Pro with the seeded players. Yeah, it was agreed, and yes, we went forward. And that was done in the June. The issues that players have raised about it changing halfway through the season, well, I'm sorry, I just thought, a firm believer the organiser has the right to change the formats, has the right to make changes to his tournament before it starts. We've all been in situations where maybe your entry's been in a little bit late and then someone's had a word and you've got in anyway. So we've all benefited one way or the other from something like that. But, you know, this is just putting it back to how it used to be. And I can't see a problem with it, and never have done.
Certainly, competitions on the tour and online registrations and stuff and payment and whatever, I think sometimes certainly players do get a bit of leeway, and it's getting a bit of perspective to understand that happens all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think there's many of us older generation players that can't say we've not benefited from that somewhere along the line.
You mentioned the World Cup before. You're not representing England anymore. You've passed over the baton to Scott Mitchell, Dan Day and Nigel Hayden. Are you still playing county, though, for Cambridgeshire?
Yeah, still playing, yeah. I've only played one this season. I had to miss the last one because we had a booking that was made some time ago but wasn't confirmed, and then they came in the confirmation at the beginning of the week. So, unfortunately, the last one I had to miss because I was due out in Holland. So, we had to go to Holland instead of playing county last. But, yeah, hopefully I'll be doing the next one. Or if not that one, maybe the one after.
If you don't mind me asking, what were you doing in Holland?
I was doing an exhibition night for the sponsors of the Dutch Open, a company called Bauhaus. Very good company, very good sponsors. And hopefully that sponsorship will also continue beyond its original contract.
I mean, what's it like playing in that competition with just so many players?
Well, it is the biggest open in the world. When you get roughly 3,500 men start the tournament and you're down to 64 after one day. The Dutch really do know how to manage a tournament, make it click, make it work, make it run, and it all seems to fit into place. And it is an awesome tournament to play in. Although, when you played your first round game, you might have 2 to 3 hours waiting for your next game, but then it all starts speeding up. And once you get that speed up, then you're sort of like played, 10 minutes off, maybe 15, 20 minutes, and then you're back on again. So it really does start to pick up at the end of the day. And yeah, it's fantastic to play. It really is. And I would recommend it to any dart player. If you fancy a big tournament, go to the Dutch Open.
I mean, it's incredible. And when you watch the finals on the Sunday, obviously on Dutch television and stuff, it just feels like such a massive occasion. You've got huge crowds watching sort of last 64 games, last 32 games that often just sort of feature local players who've come through the draw, and the support is always fantastic over there.
The support overall for all the players is absolutely brilliant by the crowd that come along for the finals. And it seems to be a bit of a constitution for a lot of them. You know, they must be at the Dutch Open finals. And they enjoy it immensely. It's party time in Holland.
Oh, it's an incredible competition. And on a personal note, the first dart competition I really remember watching in detail was the 2007 BDO World Championships. And I remember that final, you and Phil Nixon. I remember being completely hooked by that. And that was what got me into darts and specifically the BDO. Do you ever watch that final back?
Yeah, on more than one occasion, without a doubt. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, first half of the event, I mean, the Phil Nixon I knew, the way Phil could play, he just didn't do it. It just wasn't happening in the first half at all. And then after a break, and I remember standing on the stairs behind Phil just before we went back outside, and he had his darts, 3 darts in his hand, and he bashed them into his leg. Now, I was told after that he did actually draw blood, but it had the effect, and Phil started playing like I knew Phil could play. And he made it very, very hard for me in the second half. And when we got to 6-all, you know, I thought, oh, come on, just play like you did in that first set, which was absolutely sweet as a nut. And I'm pleased to say that last set there, I won 3-0. And it was, you know, straightforward to play the last set from the point of view, you know, from my point of view. You know, I'm not sure whether Phil was struggling or not, but what a great opponent. You know, love him to death.
Oh, it was an incredible, incredible tournament. And I remember sort of following you and the tour vividly after that. And obviously that kind of kick-started the ball rolling for you with the 3 consecutive World Masters titles and obviously the 3 World Championships as well. I mean, what were those years like for you as a player?
Absolutely brilliant, because you know you're top dog, you're number one, you're the man that's dominating all the big events. You know, to win 2007 the World Pro, then 8, 9 and 10 the World Masters, plus in 2010 I won the World Pro and 2011. So, you know, those 5 years, you know, was really, really good for me. You did feel, yeah, I can turn up and I can win this. Everyone you went to, I can win this. There's no one to touch me. You didn't win them all, obviously, because you don't. You know, that's the quality of the players that we've got in the BDO. So, you know, but thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, I have to say, it's kept me a fan for a long time since then. So it's a real, real genuine privilege to speak to you.
Thank you.
Something I do want to ask, I mean, you're 63 now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
How much longer do you think you're going to be sort of doing the tour and aiming to compete at the highest level in the BDO?
Oh, excuse me, one moment. I must not. Right, how long can I go on for? Well, I was aligning with a guy called Lionel Lionel Smith used to play for County Darts for Staffordshire, and Lionel was always a quality player, and he was still playing County Darts at the age of 75. Now, for me, that's a benchmark. So I'm just going to keep going. So I've got a few years yet.
That's going to be fantastic news for me, and I'm sure many, many others. And I genuinely can't echo this enough. It's been a real privilege, and thank you. Is there anything you want to say to sort of sponsors or anybody else?
Yeah, obviously, a big thanks to my sponsors, Fender. And a big thanks to all the people who watch and support the video. And to be honest, all the people that support darts, no matter who's playing or where they play for or how they play, as long as people keep watching darts, that's the main thing.
Well, thank you very much, Martin, and I wish you best for the World Masters and the World Championships, and hopefully at least a decade more to come.
Lovely. Thank you very much indeed.
As I say, it was a pleasure to speak to Wolfie, who is the reason that I'm a fan of the BDO to this day. You know, I remember watching him in 2007 and just I was captivated by him as a character and a player, and ever since then he's always been a player I've sort of resonated with and watched, and, you know, had a, you know, try and be impartial, but he's one of those players that you just want to cheer on no matter who he's playing. And it was great to be able to chat to him and great to hear that he's planning to stick around for sort of at least a decade more of those chuckles and those howls. Yes, World Masters. I was planning to do a preview of the World Masters with Gary Stafford. But I mean, I've been very short for time, a very busy new job. But also there's a lot of uncertainty around the tournament, and I didn't want it to be that Gary and I did something that then turned out to be inaccurate or misleading or misrepresentative of what was actually going to happen. There's been talk in the last week, some legitimate, some from sources that I'm not totally backing, but are there going to be 16 seeds? Are there going to be 32 seeds? You know, there's still no real confirmation about prize money, and that lack of information about the prize money has led a number of players to withdraw. Someone who got in contact with me earlier in the week was Mark McGrath of New Zealand, who said that, you know what, I can't come over. Had some issues with payment on the World Trophy side of things, and, you know, he just can't commit. And, you know, the thing is, the lack of information about prize money and the lack of advance information will always, always, always hurt the players who play on the sort of BDO affiliate regional tour, so like the USA, Canada, New Zealand, Australia. We saw it with the World Trophy. Dave Cameron just couldn't commit to it. We've seen that same with the World Masters. There are players from Australia, New Zealand, Canada. Okay, some probably never intended to come in the first place. It's a huge financial commitment, and it's probably the rewards aren't necessarily worth it. But a lot of them want to, and at the end, they just don't get enough notice and there aren't enough guarantees for them to make that commitment. I mean, there's other reasons players haven't entered. You've got the schedule, obviously, with the World Pro qualifier being at the end. It's a very, very long tournament. You know, it's like 5-6 days that players have got to take off, which, you know, it's short notice. And when most of them are still working full time and have been taking off a lot of time throughout the year already, you know, it's probably too big a commitment for some. The mid-season format change and the introduction of an entry fee obviously have frustrated and annoyed some players. Some players have taken that to the point of they're not going to participate. And, you know, rights and wrongs of that, that's an individual player's decision. The prize money I totally understand, and the scheduling I do understand. But as far as I'm concerned, the World Pro qualifier should be after the World Masters. You know, it should always be that anyone who can qualify external to the qualifier should have qualified before that qualifier takes place. I don't think you should have players kind of participating when they've still got another chance. It should be the kind of last chance saloon, which it hasn't been in previous years. And I do think it should be at the end. But, you know, not everyone's going to agree. And I'm not asking everyone to. You know, if we all agreed, it would make for a very boring world. So, you know. But, yeah, who isn't at the tournament? We've got no Martin Kleermacher, possibly no Nick Kenny. Obviously, I said Mark McGrath, but we've also got no Dan Day, no Gary Robson, no Chris Landman, no Ross Montgomery, no Dirk Telnikas, no Dave Cameron, no Jeffrey Van Egdom, no Michael Unterbuchner, and a number of others. Of those that are there, I mean, if you look at his floor form, you look at his world ranking, you look at the number of titles he's won this year, you have to favour Wesley Harms. But there again, you look at Wesley Harms' record in the majors and you say, yeah, probably not. Is he going to crumble? But there again, I think him having to start from the floor will actually be a massive benefit for Harms. I mean, he kills it on the floor. So you know what? If he starts on the floor and gets the last 32, that way, maybe he'll treat it like a Cat A+, and then he'll go very deep, semis, final, or win it. You know, I like Wesley, always have, and always want him to do well. But he's certainly got a good chance. You've got to fancy Jim Williams to go well again, obviously. He's just very, very consistent, very hard to beat on his day. And Wayne Warren as well, if he's overcome his hand issues. And with the CD players starting from the floor, there are big chance for shocks. I mean, there's some incredibly talented players on there, a lot who just do county, just do regional. I mean, the likes of, obviously, Mario van den Bogaard, Thibaut Tricol, Scott Waits, Willem Mandigas, Adam Smith-Neal. They're obviously all ranked highly. But they're all very good players that could go all the way. Also the likes of Paul Hogan, Ted Hankey, you know. I mean, he showed some good form in the World Trophy qualifiers. And if he's healthy and feeling good, he's got a great chance as well. Jesus Nogueira, who's obviously secured a tour card through the Challenge Tour. You know, he's got a chance as well if he actually plays. Should be an interesting one. You know, if you're asking me to plump for someone, I'm going to say possibly Wesley Harms. But, you know, I think it's actually quite wide open this year, so you never know. I would maybe have said Nick Kenny, but, you know, his foot injuries are obviously putting the kibosh on that. Ladies Field 2 is strong, and I think it's going to be a toss-up, as always, between Lisa Ashton, Anastasia Dobromyslova, and Mikuru Suzuki. But, you know, I think if Aileen de Graaf can replicate the consistency in fight that she showed at the World Trophy, she's also got a chance as well. I think the ladies' one's going to be really interesting. I think, based on the way they've all been playing of late, it's going to be a really high standard as well. Obviously, you've got the World Pro qualifiers, as I said, and they're going to be very interesting and very, very dependent on the draw. You could get one really stacked half or one really stacked quarter. You could have a slightly weaker one, which gives someone an easier up path. But I think it's going to be, I think it's certainly going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see who gets through. But, you know, but beyond the Masters, there's an awful lot coming up in the next few weeks. I mean, as I record now, the tournaments in Cyprus are underway with Simon Stainton as the top men's seed. There's a Cat A and a B for the women and the ladies. And with Simon being the top seed, just outside the top 20, you know, there's a big opportunity for players in that sort of 20 to 60 bracket of the world rankings to get big points. We also have the second Canadian ranking event of the season this weekend in New Brunswick. It's the Phoenix Open, which is a new competition for 2019-2020. We had the first event last weekend, actually. It was the Klondike Open, and it was won by Jim Edwards, who picked up her first ranking title in 3 years. Phoenix Open's a Cat D, and that's followed by another one next weekend, which is the Bob Jones Memorial in Trenton, Ontario. This weekend, when the podcast comes out, we've also got the Australian Masters in Geelong, which is a Cat B for the men and the ladies, and the defending champions are Peter Machin and Tori Kuish. The same weekend as the Masters, we also have the Alan Kigg Memorial, which is a Category D event in New Zealand. And then we get to November, and we've got loads of stuff. We've got the Seacoast Open in the USA. We've got the Great Lakes Open in Australia. We've got the Ted Clements Open in New Zealand. We've got the Czech Open. We've got the Malta Open. We've got the doubleheader in Italy. We've got the doubleheader in Hungary, which obviously was won last year by Benjamin Pratnamer. We've got the inaugural Killarney Festival of Darts in Ireland, which has two Cat A pluses with €3,000 available to the men's winner of those. And also we have two Cat Cs, which are the High Performance Roofing Singles, which might be my favourite sponsorship name of the season. I know it's early going, but it's going to be quite tough to beat that one. It's got quite a ring to it. But I mean, the amount of young Irish talent coming through at the minute, as we saw in Northern Ireland, I think there's going to be some really quality darts, and you know, Cat A Plus always attracts some big names. So I'm really looking forward to the action in Ireland. Czech Open's great as always. Big Cat A. We've got over 400 registered in the men's right now. We've also got Latvia. An inaugural trip to St. Petersburg wraps up the action for 2019. And obviously, we've then got a month or so's break before the World Championships. There's obviously a lot going on in November for the BDO and myself personally. I'm very busy with work in November, so kind of squeaky bum time where I work. Those of you who've worked out where I work or know where I work, obviously you'll know why. So, at the moment, my plans for the podcast are slightly up in the air. My plan at the minute is to maybe kind of get an interview or two out in November.